It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. In the spring of 1974, as the last American troops were being pulled out of Vietnam, Ron Kovic and a small group of other severely injured veterans launched the American Veterans Movement. Kovic, best known for his memoir Born on the 4th of July, corralled fellow disabled vets into staging a sit-in in the Los Angeles office of Senator Alan Cranston, demanding better treatment of injured and disabled veterans. He writes about this protest and the long shadow that war casts over veterans who need lifelong care in his book, Hurricane Street. And we welcome Ron Kovic to the program. Ron, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, many people know your personal story from your book, Born on the 4th of July, and the Oliver Stone film that starred Tom Cruise as you. Was it on your second tour in Vietnam that you were wounded?
Yeah, I joined the Marine Corps out of high school on Long Island. Right after high school, on September 2nd, 1964, I was sent to Parris Island, South Carolina, Marine Corps boot camp. And several months later, I volunteered for my first tour of duty, and I spent 13 months, which was the Marine Corps tour of duty back then, in Vietnam from December 65, I believe, to early January 1967. After coming back from my first tour, I was stationed Cherry Point, North Carolina, Marine Corps Air Wing, and it was during that period that I volunteered to go back to Vietnam a second time, and it was several months into that particular tour of duty on January 20th, 1968, just before the Tet Offensive, that I was wounded, paralyzed from my mid-chest down, and I've been in a wheelchair for the rest of my life, yeah.
And obviously, you've been in and out of care, especially at the VA and Army hospitals.
Initially, I was in the intensive care ward in Da Nang. After being wounded, actually, I was shot in the front of my foot, and the bullet blew out the back of my heel. And then, about a minute later, I was shot in the right shoulder, went through my right lung, collapsed my lung, severed my spine, paralyzing me from the mid-chest down. The first Marine who tried to save my life came up from behind and was almost immediately shot in the heart, and he died within seconds. A few minutes later, a second Marine grabbed a hold of me, came up from behind under heavy fire, carried me back somehow, making it both of us back to our lines without getting hit. And that was the last I saw of him. And I eventually was moved back across a river, the Quaviet River, where I received my first medical attention. Then I was sent a helicopter, a UE medevac chopper to, I think it was Dong Ha, and then I caught a flight C-130 down to, with other wounded Marines, to Da Nang. I was in the Da Nang intensive care ward for a week. Initially, I was given the last rites of the Catholic Church. They didn't know if I was going to make it or not, and I made it through those 7 days in and out of morphine. I was sent to the Yokosuka Naval Hospital in Japan for about a week, maybe 10 days. And then I began that long journey with other wounded young men back to Alaska, then Virginia, then up to Long Island, where initially I was at the St. Albans Naval Hospital on Long Island with wounded Marines. And then after several months, that was the spring of 1968, I actually can clearly remember, while still at St. Albans Naval Hospital on Long Island recovering, Martin Luther King. It was, I believe it was April 4th, 1968. He was shot and killed on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis. I remember that clearly. It was not long after that I was sent to the Bronx VA Hospital, to the paraplegic ward, and it was very different than what I had experienced in the St. Albans Military Hospital. The wards were overcrowded, understaffed, men cried out for help and never came. As depicted in Born on the 4th of July movie and my book as well, there were rats on the ward. And in fact, Life magazine did a very shocking expose of the spinal cord injury wards at the Bronx VA entitled Our Forgotten Wounded, the May 1970 Life magazine article, which was quite controversial at the time. So that was the ward I was on in particular. Eventually, I left that hospital and I got a hand control car. I went through about 11 months of rehab, as most of us who were paralyzed did. And after about a year or so of trying to go to college on Long Island, I was very restless. I was dealing with anxiety attacks, nightmares, a lot of stress, or they would call it PTSD today, combat-related stress. And I moved out to California, where I began going to the, as an outpatient basis, the Long Beach VA hospital, which I was surprised to discover was as bad, if not worse at the time, than the Bronx VA in New York. So we had problems.
You mentioned that you thought that perhaps things would be better at the VA out in Long Beach.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when I moved out to California, I thought to myself, you know, 3,000 miles, warm, sunshine, it's got to be better than, you know, the hospital here has got to, you know, it's so far away from the Bronx, that can't be repeating itself. But as I was to find out, it was repeating itself back then in many VA hospitals around the country. Many veterans were dealing with a government that could, at the time, seem to be able to spend more money on some of the most expensive weapons of war and not be able to care for their most severely injured upon their return home from war. It was quite ironic.
We're talking with Ron Kovic. He is the author of a memoir that you've probably heard of, Born on the 4th of July. He has a new book, Hurricane Street, which, Ron, you know, we're about to touch upon the Long Beach VA and how your surprise of the condition of these VA hospitals led you to an incident that made national news in 1974.
It was really amazing because we had nothing really to speak of. You know, we had no contacts. We were in a VA hospital in the spinal cord injury ward. I found myself back on the ward. I had a bed sore, which is really one of the challenges of being a paraplegic, trying to avoid having your skin break down. It's a very complex challenge, whether it's the catheter with inside of you so you can go to the bathroom, trying not to have an infection, or, you know, you're battling with this all the time. And it's really a challenging wound and a challenging disability. And let's set the stage for what was going on during that period. The war was ending. Actually, that was just the beginning of Watergate as well. President Nixon mm-hmm. was under a great deal of pressure to resign, and he would eventually resign in August of that year. But this was the spring of 1974, and the war was ending, and the wounded were coming home, and we were all in our early 20s. In this particular place, we were in the Long Beach VA spinal cord injury wards, and we were quadriplegics, paraplegics, as I said before, some of the most catastrophic wounds of the war, and we were just trying to make it through each day. There was a whole feeling of defeat, a feeling the war had been lost, and why did I sacrifice my body? What was this all about? And not only that, but the treatment on the wards was particularly insensitive. There were problems on the ward, and what we decided to do, we first started talking with a group of paralyzed veterans in back of the paraplegic ward, but eventually we formed a group called the Patient Workers' Rights Committee, and we began to get more and more people from not only the SCI, spinal cord injury ward, but from all over the hospital that began to join us. And within a few weeks, we had between 100 and 150 veterans in back of the paraplegic wards every Thursday night gathering together and discussing the problems that we were experiencing in the VA. Well, the powers that be at the hospital at that time didn't like it. They sent around the security representatives, and they were actually photographing us. It was quite intimidating for veterans back from a war who only wanted to talk about improving their condition in the hospital to be photographed by people as if we were committing some type of crime. Well, eventually I left the hospital, and the group that we formed fell apart. And when I returned back to California after spending a summer in New York, I began to put together an idea, which eventually became the American Veterans Movement. I went out and got a bunch of buttons and banners and flags. I did it on what I should have been using for my monthly rent on Hurricane Street, because I was living along the ocean at the time in Marina del Rey in Southern California. I was living on Hurricane Street, a little cottage along the ocean, and the idea was I was going to come back to California and write my first book, which I did not write, but was the first attempt to write Born on the 4th of July. But instead, I started writing late one night when I couldn't write the book anymore, and I started thinking about the guys in the hospital. I thought, you know, I had promised them I would never let them down, and so I created this American Veterans Movement, drove down to the hospital, organized the guys, and got them, but reluctantly, to come with me to create a caravan down to the federal building in Los Angeles, and we caravaned down there with our hand-controlled cars and our wheelchairs. And what we did was we initially planned to meet with Senator Cranston, who was a senator from California at the time. And he was also the head of a very important hospital committee, VA Hospital Committee in Washington. And he was up for re-election. And so we decided to begin a sit-in the first day we were there. We're just going to sit in there for a few hours. Well, we ended up spending the entire night there. Senator Cranston was very supportive. He was in Washington at the time. He sent over blankets and mattresses. He actually sent over food for that night from the Westwood VA Food Services Department. And so we had a good night. But the next morning, all the guys left, with the exception of myself and one other wounded veteran. And on that particular night, when there were just two of us left and it looked like everything was going to fall apart, we decided to call up the press, call up the Associated Press, the UPI, and tell them that we're going on a hunger strike to the death. Those are the exact words we used. We're two Vietnam veterans, and we're going on a hunger strike to the death to protest the poor treatment in not only the Long Beach VA hospital, but in VA hospital facilities all over the country. We demand to be treated like human beings. And that was what we said that night. And to my surprise, the next morning, the press was everywhere. They were calling. And by that night, the guys who had left initially and gone back after that first night all had seen us on TV, had heard about us on the radio. They came back in their wheelchairs. They joined us. They committed themselves to the fast, to the hunger strike. And we went 17 days without food, and we occupied Senator Cranston's office for 19 days, demanding to meet with Donald Johnson, the head of the VA, and eventually he was forced to come out and meet with us. But let me say one thing, and that's, as I look back upon it, as I'm turning 70 years old on the 4th of July, this Monday, and as I look back upon that incident 40 years ago, I can't help but think how absurd it was. And if you can imagine, some of the most severely wounded veterans who really were willing to sacrifice themselves for this country, laying on a senator's office on mattresses, sacrificing themselves once again in a hunger strike, going on a hunger strike, just asking to be treated decently. I mean, that's unconscionable. That should have never happened in this country of ours.
Well, in the hunger strike and sit-in itself, you're dealing with a number of vets that required care. I mean, you were bringing people
absolutely
in from the VA
and
hospital.
That was really amazing. You know, there's one chapter in Hurricane Street where the doctor, actually was the chief of the Spinal Cord Injury Center, was a wonderful man, very compassionate, and unbeknownst to the hospital, they did not send him down. He came down on his own that day. He came down because he cared about us so much, and he was committed to us. You know, he used to call us his boys. We were always his boys. That's how committed he was to us. He came down to the senator's office with his stethoscope and went from veteran to veteran laying on those mattresses, paralyzed veterans, and he would take their blood pressure, ask them how they were. If somebody had a wound or a bed sore that needed to be bandaged, he worked with one of the women who was with us, who was studying to be a nurse, and we had a lot of help. You know, for all of our criticisms of the VA at the time, I mentioned this also in Hurricane City, it's very important that I not forget that there were many people that worked within the VA hospital system that were terrific, that really did care and showed the same commitment and professionalism that the doctor who came down to visit us and help us. You know, we always admired him for coming down. He actually came down several times. We had other doctors from the Westwood VA, which was close to the federal building, come and visit us and say, you know, we're kind of nervous about coming down here, but we want you to know you have our support. We really want to make the VA the best hospital we possibly can, you know.
If you're just joining us, we are joined this hour by Ron Kovic, who is very well known for his memoir, Born on the 4th of July, and his activism on behalf of other disabled veterans. Ron, thanks so much for sticking around to talk to us this hour.
If you're enjoying it, I'm enjoying it. And by the way, I was born in the Midwest.
Yeah, where were you born?
On July 4th, 1946, I was born in Ladysmith, Wisconsin, I'm proud to say.
Probably a beautiful 4th of July in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I read about that 4th of July in 1946. The war had just ended, and this is the first time they allowed fireworks. I believe during the war years, they might not have had the big fireworks displays, but this is the first year they had fireworks in Ladysmith, Wisconsin. From what my mother said, when I was born at about 10:15 at night, 70 years ago, believe it or not, I'm still here. It's amazing. But 70 years ago, I was born on July 4th, 1946. And the night that I was born, around 10:15 at night of the 4th of July, the fireworks in Ladysmith had just ended. And the doctor said to my mother, you know, you've got a real firecracker here.
Ron, we were talking before the break about your new book, Hurricane Street, which partially recounts a sit-in that you and some other veterans conducted in 1974. You arranged a sit-in at Senator Alan Cranston's Los Angeles office, and that turned into a hunger strike. The idea was to protest the conditions at VA hospitals, like the one you came back to in the Bronx and in Long Beach, and just some of the poor ways that veterans with severe injuries were being treated. Part of Vietnam's legacy is that the next generation reminded themselves to separate the war and the warrior. So when vets returned from Iraq and Afghanistan, they weren't seen as representative necessarily of government policy. But in 1974, when you were trying to recruit some of these other vets that were in these bad conditions in these hospitals with significant injuries, they were probably carrying around a lot of different kind of psychological weight.
Absolutely. Boy, you really hit that right on the head. They felt lost. They felt defeated. And I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to write Hurricane Street, was it was a positive story. It was a story of young men back from a war with severe wounds who felt defeated and depressed and wondered whether or not they even had a life. You know, the tremendous amount of guilt, and they were suffering both physically and psychologically. And it's a story of men who somehow, if but reluctantly, came together and organized themselves and empowered themselves and eventually had a victory of sorts in a period of time where there was no victory or no optimism. These men, for one brief moment, just as the war was ending, even though, as you will discover at the end of the book in the epilogue, that many of the men involved in that strike with me are no longer alive. Several committed suicide, and others died far too young. But for that one brief moment, they were able to find a sense of themselves, find a sense of dignity, and rise above their wounding and become someone they could be proud of. And they made a statement that I felt was an important, it was an important story to tell. It was a moment in history that perhaps would have been forgotten if I had not taken the time 3.5 years ago to begin writing this. I thought about doing this story ever since I wrote 4th of July. I thought, you know, I'd really like to write the story of that strike. I really, you know, even though it was just a few of us and the whole movement we created fell apart after a couple of months, at least for that one moment, it showed how men could come together and not be afraid, raise their voices, take action, and improve their situation, yeah, and find a sense of meaning in their lives.
When you were a young man, as you describe in Born on the 4th of July, you were a very patriotic guy, and you volunteered for service.
Oh, absolutely.
In
I grew up with John Wayne movies, Sergeant Rock comic books, Manny Mattel submachine guns. I had the Marine Corps guidebook when I was 9 years old, practicing how to salute in front of a mirror. I was inspired by John F. Kennedy's "Ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country" speech at his inaugural address. And I couldn't wait to join the Marines. My mother and father had both honorably served during World War II in the Navy, joining up not long after Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941. And both of my uncles had served in the Marine Corps during World War II as well as during the Korean War. Yes, I did. And I grew up in a particularly post-World War II baby boom patriotic time in America, there was not a lot of questioning of right and wrong. As far as I was concerned at the time, how could our country be wrong? I mean, we were always right, and that was all to be shattered in the Vietnam War, and some great questions were asked by me, and especially after my wounding and my time in the Bronx VA hospital, and influenced by this extraordinary and tumultuous time, this post-late 60s, early 70s, how could I not have been changed profoundly by this time and by my particular experiences?
What's interesting about your journey, you talk about how the men that joined you in this protest in California, it gave them a sense of meaning. And I wonder, after all your entries and after your struggles with your own government to just even try to get care and your protest of the war, did you, in your mind, redefine what you think patriotism means for you personally?
Well, it means being honest. And it's more than just simply waving the flag, though I think it's wonderful to wave the flag, and it's more than simply saying to a soldier or a Marine when they come back from deployment, thank you for your service, you're a hero. It's more than that. It's a lifelong commitment to their care and making certain, as a citizen, treating them like your own son and daughter, as you would. I mean, showing them great respect, ensuring that they have the very best hospital care. Not only that, but an excellent GI Bill, making it accessible for as many as possible, just as our fathers after World War II, many working-class fathers were given the opportunity to go to some of the finest colleges in the country, and consequently, it enhanced the academic and intellectual infrastructure of our country and made it a better place, and we became a smarter, wiser, and more effective nation. I think patriotism, to me, is not being afraid to question our foreign policy, our domestic policy, not being afraid to be a direct participant in this democratic process. I think that one of the things that I learned is you've got to question authority. You've got to challenge it. And when you feel like it's wrong and you can muster and find the courage within yourself, it's very important that you step forward, that you speak out and not be afraid to speak. We have that right as every American. And when we feel something's wrong, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, conservative, or right-wing, left-wing, or whatever, we're all Americans, and we all have the right to agree or disagree and to question. And we need a dialogue. We need to discuss, to talk. You know, what just comes to my mind right now is a painting that Norman Rockwell did. Do you remember Norman Rockwell, right?
Of course.
And the painting is, one of them is Four Freedoms, and the other one is, it's a town meeting, and obviously it's somewhere in a small town in America. Maybe it was New Hampshire or somewhere, I'm not sure. But there's a man raising his hand, and he's a bit shy, and he's raising his hand wanting to speak at the meeting. And it has to do with the courage sometimes it takes to speak and the courage it takes to participate. But I think it's important. Patriotism is important for all of us as we reflect on it this 4th of July holiday season. I think it's important that we think about it's not always easy for us to speak or to take part in the dialogue, the discussion. You know, we don't want to be hurt. We don't want people to say we're wrong. But we've got to try to find the courage, more and more, all of us, to find the courage to participate in this democracy, because it is truly, I believe, if we all continue to participate, it is the greatest democracy in the world.
You know, you're right in Hurricane Street about the conditions in these VA hospitals that led to this protest, and it's very shocking to see this. But, you know, a few years ago, people were also shocked to learn about the conditions and waiting lists for treatments at VA hospitals in places like Phoenix and Fort Collins. Mm. And a few years before that, we were shocked to learn about the conditions at Walter Reed Army Medical Center.
Yeah.
With your perspective and having fought this fight and having gone on a hunger strike in the 70s, what do you think when you see the story of these, of how we're taking care of our wounded veterans?
Well, it's outrageous, it's unconscionable, and it's unacceptable. I mean, this should not be happening in this country. And, you know, when we talk about let's take the long waiting list. Can you imagine a young man or woman coming back from Iraq suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, nightmares, anxieties, thoughts of suicide, wanting immediate help, really close to taking their lives. And let me remind people that between 18 and 22 of our Iraq and Afghan veterans commit suicide every day. I mean, that's unbelievable. 18 to 22 of our precious sons and daughters commit suicide every day. And can you imagine one of them going to a VA hospital seeking help, suffering, being right on that ragged edge between darkness and light, between death and life, life and death, and being turned down and told, you can't come, we're filled up, can you come back in another month? You can't do that. What if someone went to a hospital with a heart attack and they said, you know what, we're just too busy, can you come back in a month or two? Well, that's the same thing with the psychological casualties, the same thing as a heart attack. If you don't treat that immediately, you're going to lose your patient, you know? We need to respond immediately. If we can't do it, we need to find ways to do it. We're the wealthiest country in the world. I mean, we've got billionaires in this country. We're a great country. We can do it if we only come together and commit ourselves to making this care the very best care possible. This should not be happening. And we're a better country than that. We can change this. And never doubt for a moment that we can't change this, because we've done some great things throughout our history. We can change this situation. There's nothing too difficult for us as citizens to overcome. Nothing, if we all come together and we work toward it, you know, together and believe.
Ron Kovic's new book, Hurricane Street, is out this week. The 40th anniversary edition of his book, Born on the 4th of July, is also released this week with a foreword by Bruce Springsteen. Ron Kovic, happy 70th birthday.
Oh, thank you. I hope you have a great 4th. I really enjoyed the interview with you. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, take care.
It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC.